The buzzer has sounded on the first half of the General Assembly's 2021 session, sending Hoosier lawmakers to the proverbial locker room to catch their breath, ice down bruised egos, and refine their game plan for the coming 2 months. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll examine the session thus far. It's still too early to declare definitive winners and losers because, as longtime University of Kansas basketball coach Bill Self famously observed, there aren't many things less important than a score at halftime. But what we can and will do is tell you who has scored, who has taken shots, and who has landed in foul trouble. Don't go away. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House and the Field House to your house. And joining me to assess the first half of the 2021 legislative session are Brandon Smith, State House reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting and host of Indiana Week in Review, which, as I like to say, airs on many of these same public broadcasting stations. Lindsay Erdody, who covers state government and politics for the Indianapolis Business Journal. Erica Heron, education reporter for the Indianapolis Star, and Whitney Downard, State House reporter for CNHI, the publisher of daily newspapers in Terre Haute, Anderson, and Kokomo. Thank you all. You could be sleeping. This arguably could be a day off, but no, you came to share your thoughts, and I appreciate it. Now, I opened the show with a quote from a basketball coach from the Big 12, so I feel it's only appropriate, since we are sitting here in Basketball Central, of quoting a Hoosier-born and bred coaching legend, John Wooden, who said, "Never mistake activity for achievement." What have we had so far this session, Brandon?
Well, first, I'd like to note you started by quoting a Kansas coach, and you're asking a Mizzou reporter to answer the question.
So I got the Big 12, I got the Big 10. All right, next time we'll get all right.
Activity or achievement? I think there were definitely some achievements. I think first and foremost is House Bill 1006, which was a criminal justice reform bill that Greg Steuerwald, Representative Greg Steuerwald from Avon, wrote.
Surprising amount of backing, not only that's Democrats, the achievement. But I mean, from police agencies across the state.
The Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, the NAACP, several other key organizations in black communities, as well as every law enforcement organization in the state, the prosecutors, the public defenders. I mean, find me another issue on which they all agree, or another bill on which they're all backing. I don't think you can do it. And to do that, particularly this year, after everything we've seen over the last 12 months, which is why the bill is being written, of course. But yeah, I would call that the major achievement in the first half. We'll see if it gets through the Senate unscathed, which is going to be the big test, I think, now at this point. But if it does, I think that could be the major achievement for the entire session.
We always say Indiana's at the tail end of any kind of change or reform, but maybe not.
They could be leading on this.
Maybe not this time around. Well, let me go around and get your take on the same question. Activity or achievement? Or a mix of the two, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's been a mix of the two, because that certainly was an achievement and no small feat for the House to get that through, passing it unanimously. I mean, just that certainly is an achievement. But and we also saw the bill to provide businesses with some COVID-19 lawsuit immunity that has already gotten through, signed by the governor. The business community would certainly say that was an achievement. But we've seen just a whole bunch of other activity going on with bills going after the city of Indianapolis, which business leaders are not thrilled to be seeing, and just things not moving as fast as I think some of us expected things to move. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the second half and how some of these things play out. Everyone keeps reminding me that it's still really early and a lot's going to change, you know, especially with...
Usually it's the last 48 hours that really matter, right? Everything else is just prelude or build up to that.
Right, right. So I think, you know, that activity is going to continue into the second half. You know, talking about like the emergency powers bill for the governor, we've got two very different bills in each chamber swapping sides now. You know, what's going to happen with the Indigo bill, certainly important to Indianapolis.
You've given a good foreshadowing of all the bills I wanted to ask about. This will be a good scene setter for what we talk about. But let me ask you, Erica, same question.
Activity or achievement? It depends on who you ask, I think, especially when you're talking about the education legislation that's happened so far. School choice advocates are going to tell you there's been a lot of achievements so far. It'll depend on what the final versions of some of those bills that would expand school choice in the state look like.
And that's basically, for those who haven't followed it as closely, certainly, as you have, it takes the 300 of the 378 million dollars that the governor and actually the House budget would set aside for K through 12 education, and it would take a third of it roughly to expand school choice with a scholarship program that effectively removes any other barriers to attendance at those schools for many families. I think, what is it, who family of four below $142,000 a year would be able
to. Close to 150. $145,000, I think, in year two.
So it really opens it up.
Yeah, I think we were really
excited. Yeah. Okay, and last but not least.
I guess I'd lean a little bit toward more the activity side. You know, we said that we were only prioritizing, you know, the necessary bills, and we weren't going to waste our time with bills that didn't seem to be as important, but we spent a significant amount of time arguing about whether or not Indianapolis should have the right to change its name, and nobody's calling for that right now. So
I would have to actually
not only talking about it, it passed.
Exactly.
Let's not forget the popcorn bill.
So I would say that there have been quite a few bills that I'm surprised are considered, because they don't seem to be as big of a priority.
Well, let's go from there, because this was supposed to be the COVID-19 session, and it was going to be all COVID all the time. And if there was one school of thought that if it wasn't related in some way to COVID, and I guess you could make an argument anything can be somehow framed in that way, but if it wasn't directly related, it would be very much on the back burner. But surprise, surprise, we've seen the usual gun bills, we've seen the abortion bills, we've seen popcorn bills, the official snack food. It really, if you look at the bill makeup and you didn't know that this was supposed to be the COVID-19 session, would anybody really get that this is somehow different?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised in how many ways it does resemble a normal session in that sense. There are some key bills. I mean, the COVID liability that Lindsay talked about obviously wouldn't exist without COVID-19. I think about the expansion of telehealth, which Indiana's been slowly doing for a while, but this really widens it the way that Governor Holcomb, through executive order, had done over the last year or so during COVID-19. That makes it permanent. So
maybe make people more willing to tolerate, say, the proposed tax increase for cigarettes. In that we knew going into this that Hoosiers were not quite the healthiest group in the country, and it probably didn't help us in terms of our ability to weather the COVID storm.
It certainly lends itself to the argument on why you need to do that, although at the same time, you know, advocates have been calling for a $2 per pack increase for forever. The House Republican bill to do that was $1, which advocates were still like, okay, because the dollar increase is the price point at which you really start to affect behavior, which is supposed to be the goal of this tax increase. It's not for money. It's so that you can try and get people to stop smoking or, you know, quit smoking or stop smoking ever smoking to begin with.
Hope it's not for money, because if it works right, it would be diminishing stream of revenue to the point that if it's successful, there's no money coming in.
Right, but then the House Republican budget cut it down to 50 cents. Yeah. And we just talked to Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray at the end of the halfway point, and we asked him, he was asked about that, and I mean, he kind of indicated that he doesn't really see the point of a 50-cent increase. So I think if the Senate Republican budget has a cigarette tax hike, which I personally think it won't, but if it does, I don't think it'll be 50 cents. It'll either be a dollar or nothing.
Well, we talked about a few bills that were sort of framed in the context of COVID, but a lot of them, there weren't even attempts made, Lindsay, to say that this has to do with COVID. Do you think this was a COVID session so far?
Yes and no. I mean, certainly in the way some things are happening just procedurally, it's a COVID session. I mean, the House isn't even in the State House.
Right. They're in IGC South, right. Indiana Government South. The Senate's doing this multi-tiered thing where they're not even on the together
right.
in the same. In,
right.
in committee hearings, you have people room. in another room doing it by video.
That's
right.
About to change.
Yeah, that is changing. So I think maybe second half will feel a little bit more normal, although, you know, even though the House is in a separate chamber, it does feel kind of normal to me, at least. You know, you don't have staff walking around like you normally would, but lawmakers are in there, they're at their desks, media are on the sides of, you know, each side of the room. You know, we're still having availabilities with the heads of each chamber every week, even though it looks a little differently. So in those aspects, you know, some of it's the same, but, you know, in terms of the COVID bills that we've seen, I think we're kind of forgetting about some of these that are in a way related to the pandemic, like some of the grant programs, almost all the grant programs that the House budget includes are all because of the pandemic. I mean, the learning loss grant, the small business grant, the health grant, you don't see those in the budget if not for COVID.
Of course, one could argue that the entire budget, in a way, is a reflection because you have agencies which are still not going to be back to pre-COVID levels. So, I mean, it seems that the first few days or weeks of the session, everybody was pretty obsessed with the implications of COVID, you know, with who's wearing a mask and who's not, and who's mind, you know, who's staying behind the plexiglass and who's not. That seemed to wear off pretty quickly, though.
That's relaxed a lot. Yeah, we were really looking at who wasn't wearing a mask on the first day, but the number of lawmakers not wearing masks, especially as they're, you know, chit-chatting with each other on the floor, has really grown over the weeks. I think maybe some of this, too, that we're talking about, you know, we looked at, it was a lot of COVID bills kind of at the beginning of session, and I think they were trying to get a lot of that done because we didn't know how long we would be in there. I think everyone is expecting an interruption at some point, you know, due to COVID, maybe some sort of shutdown or slowdown.
That was the conventional wisdom, I guess, going in, wasn't it?
We all see that, and we haven't. So then they've gotten to a lot of non-COVID things as everyone has felt, I think, more comfortable and gotten more into the groove, and it starts to feel like a more regular session.
Yeah, if you want to say activity or achievement, I think an achievement is they managed to get through the first half of the session without having a major stoppage because of COVID outbreak.
That's, and again, I think a lot of people probably question whether they would be able to do that or whether it would be able to run as smoothly as it has. When the history books are written, will this be the COVID session, or is that just going to be a tiny, teeny, tiny little asterisk at the bottom that nobody even pays attention to?
I'm actually a little surprised by the bills that aren't being introduced. I expected to see a little bit more concerning health. We have seen some inequalities that were exposed by this, not just race, but also, you know, essential versus non-essential, people who are forced to continue working and those who can work from home. But I'm also surprised by how little movement we've seen on nursing homes in particular. There has not been any sort of bill to increase staffing levels or beef up infection control protocols. So I'm a little surprised that the legislature hasn't really done anything in the public health realm other than the public health grants that Lindsay mentioned, which kind of seemed to me to be a one-time infusion of dollars and not an overall strengthening of our system.
In fact, nursing home, the only legislation that really has been on point there was the aforementioned liability, civil liability
waiver. And another
waiver.
Bill granting essential caregiver visitation rights.
That's true as well. And you say you're surprised that these bills haven't come up, some of these health inequity bills and other attempts to shore up the health and well-being of the state. Do you think that's because the people who at least seem to be most enthusiastic about those bills are in, well, should we call them super minorities in both chambers? That has not been the on the agenda of the parties that control both chambers.
Yeah, I have not seen any push from the leadership of the controlling party of the chamber. I, you know, asked them about it last week, and both of them kind of just said we didn't think any bills were introduced in the first place. So I would say it's kind of on both parties that there weren't very many bills introduced in the first place, but it's definitely what few bills were introduced, hardly any of
and
them.
A few Democrats were, I think, championing those causes, but again, not to the extent that it was able to prevail on the committee chairs to give the bills a hearing. And another theme, COVID-19 was certainly a theme this session. Another one that maybe has been a surprise is how, I don't know how to frame this, maybe the lack of respect or the deference that has been paid the governor, newly elected to a second term, more votes than anybody who's ever been on a ballot in the state of Indiana, and yet his fellow Republicans who control with supermajorities both chambers have basically shot him down several times. They overrode his first ever veto from last session on tenant rights. They basically, we talked earlier about the funding for education, which I'm not sure he's overly enthusiastic about taking a third of the additional money and directing it in that way. curbing his emergency powers that he's employed. What's going on
pregnancy
here?
Pregnancy accommodations?
Pregnancy accommodations, which was one of his pillars.
He waved the white flag on that a couple weeks ago.
Did they forget to check his party affiliation, or did they look and see that he voted in a Democratic primary in 1968, or what happened here?
I think they don't care what he thinks on a lot of these issues. They have super majorities. They can do whatever they want. And with such a weak veto in this state, as we just saw, as you alluded to, I'm not sure it matters that much what the governor says.
So he has no recourse and shouldn't even attempt?
We know that the governor's staff works hard behind the scenes.
That's always been the story on him. We do it behind the scenes.
We just asked him yesterday about some of these, he was just asked yesterday about some of these governor powers, executive, emergency powers bills that are moving along, particularly the Senate one, which would, if passed as it currently stands, would stop the emergency declaration pretty much the minute it's signed. Mm-hmm. By the time you get to early May. He played the old, well, there's a lot of time left. And he could be right. Maybe we will see a lot of these things, significantly watered down by the time we get to sine die. But if you look at his track record over his first term, and then look at what's happened in this term, in this year, I don't know why you would expect things to change dramatically in his favor.
Is still time in his from his perspective?
I mean, certainly there is still time until sine die for things to change, but I don't think we're going to see the governor change the way he acts about things. I mean, he's been known to not comment on legislation as it works its way through. I'd say this year he's commented more than years past, simply because we have these press conferences every week, and he's asked about them. But he normally does not talk about it. He is not even particularly vocal and out there speaking about things on his legislative agenda. I mean, think about hate crimes a couple years ago. He didn't get what he wanted from it. He did speak at the halfway point, kind of trying to really, push that the way he wanted it to go. And it didn't happen in the end. Not the way he wanted
it to.
He ended up
declaring victory, which I wonder is he in a position can declare victory this time with a straight face? Typically a governor has the big easel, and right at the day after the session or 2 days, once people wake up, they go to and they have all the check marks in the boxes. Look at all the things I've done. Can he, Erica, actually do that this session, do you think?
I don't know that there's a path for that right now, not at this point. I mean, things could change, like everyone said, things could change. But there are several bills that are pointed directly at him, at restricting his power, at taking things away from him. It's going to be hard to declare victory on that.
And I would say he will probably try to declare victory on pregnancy accommodations in the end, because a bill probably will pass. But it doesn't require employers to provide any accommodation, so I think that's a bit of a harder sell to try to say.
Sort of analogous to the hate crimes,
bill did do something.
Did do something, right? But it wasn't nearly as specific, certainly, as what he wanted. You think this is pretty accurate assessment? The governor basically is licking his wounds this session, do you think?
Yeah, he made, his state of the state and his announcements weren't anything surprising. And so everybody knew what he was prioritizing going into the session. And even with the budget, there were clearly glaring differences, his budget actually did do something about teacher pay by paying down teacher pension, which in a roundabout way kind of helps with teacher pay, what was in the teacher recommendation pay salary increase report. But the House budget doesn't include nearly the same amount for that. So I just don't think that there's much he can claim as a win this year.
Well, so the budget didn't go directly to teacher salaries. Yeah. That just freed up the $300 for the $377.
But none of the other salary recommendations have even been picked up by the rest of the legislature.
No, they haven't done anything from that report.
And, of course, those decisions are still made at the local level for the time being at the local school board level about teacher pay, which brings me to the topic of another entity or group of people. The governor's not the only person, apparently, who maybe is sort of getting the short end of the straw. A lot of local officials are saying, hey, why all of a sudden are the members of the General Assembly not content doing their own job, but they want to do our job, too? And we're seeing this in numerous things, everything from the siting, perhaps, of wind farms, to restrictions on tenant. Well, we saw the tenant override, which again wasn't it basically saying, hey, locals, you can't really have anything to do with the relationship between tenants and landlords. And we're even seeing it not just at the municipal level, but at the county. There was a bill that would say, hey, if a prosecutor, elected county prosecutor, doesn't want to enforce part of the criminal code, well, we'd have the attorney, we'd empower the attorney general to have a special prosecutor come in and do it. I mean, is this what happened to the notion of the government that works best is that which is closest to the people?
Yeah, that's kind of been thrown out the window this year. I mean, that's always been a bit of a myth in the sense that the General Assembly decides local control is best when it's an issue they want decided at the local level, and when they don't, they take it over. You know, the line they spin and have for a very long time under Democrats and Republicans has always been, well, the General Assembly created local governments in Indiana through the Constitution, and so we can decide what they get to do and what
we either
they
can't
not.
Have a patchwork quilt, or you can't have, yeah.
It's taken itself to a new level, I think, this session, to the fact that, I mean, you kind of referenced this earlier, business leaders in Indianapolis sent a letter to the leadership saying, whoa, back off. Now, that was specifically about Marion County, but you're seeing these across the board. There's a bill about, local health orders. There's one that was halted that had to do with local building standards. So we've seen
whether a community can have architectural standards.
Yeah. So I think there's been some acknowledgement that maybe we're going
you think
a little
so?
Further.
Because,
than,
I mean, it still seems to be had. We
but
much
yeah,
of it was about
it's
law enforcement, oversight
in
of the Indianapolis Police Department,
yeah.
or mass transit. Again, that's a community you live in and follow closely.
Yeah.
So, Indianapolis seems to really be a target.
Indianapolis is certainly a target, it's not the first time Indianapolis has been a target. I mean, the Indigo bill came up last year and it died last year. It's back again. We've seen some of the controversial bills, at least for Indianapolis, die. The bill that would have taken over IMPD, that has not moved forward. The bill that would have changed how zoning is done through the whole county got tweaked so it's not creating zoning boards in every township anymore. It's keeping it as is and changing the makeup of the existing boards. But some of the bills are still moving. The Indigo bill is a perfect example. That is headed to the House, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens.
And that basically turns, well, pun intended, takes the keys away from Indianapolis and turns the keys to the bus.
I mean, it basically turns it off.
It turns it off. Well, it turns it off because they can't raise the money,
forward.
The matching funds that are needed. But basically, they no longer have control of their bus. Do you see this as an aberration? Is this just some weird circumstance here because you have, Democratic leadership in our capital city, and that seems to stick in the craw of the supermajorities?
I agree. Like we've said, like everyone has said, this is not the first time we've seen bills targeted at local issues. It does seem like it's more this year. It does seem like Indianapolis is more in the crosshairs this year. But it's not the only place, and those aren't the only local issues. I mean, the bill that kicked off all of the controversy last week was, some lawmakers are saying this is another bill that was a local issue that should be handled at the local level or through mechanisms we already have. But people in those places weren't happy with the results, so they brought it to the State House, and the State House is trying to deal with it again. This very, one township in St. Joe County and wanting to, switch school districts has kicked off everything last week, another local bill.
Well, I mean, Whitney, obviously Indianapolis has been upset. As you saw, we had business leadership say, hey, what's going on? You're focusing on communities that traditionally haven't been in the bullseye, with Terre Haute, with Anderson, with Kokomo. Is there a concern there, or is this just sort of machinations of the General Assembly not to be worried about?
These bills that were actually Indianapolis-focused are affecting these other communities. For example, SB Senate Bill 200 by Senator Mike Young would take away prosecutorial discretion to not prosecute some crimes, and Senator Young has claimed that it's not inspired by Indianapolis prosecutor Ryan Mears not prosecuting small amounts of marijuana, but that's going to affect every prosecutor who decides not to prosecute, a certain type of crime or decides to prioritize their office's decisions. So I think that everybody's going to get thrown under the bus if we decide that, we don't want specific counties to be able to have control.
I do have increasingly a theory about why we've seen so much legislation this year to empower the General Assembly, which is, I think, over the last year during COVID-19, there were so many lawmakers unhappy with all of the decisions that were being made by the governor, by local officials, and they felt powerless. The governor says repeatedly that he checked in with legislative leadership, said, do you want to come in for a special session? Do you think we need that? And was told no. Only Roderick Bray, Todd Houston, and Eric Holcomb know the truth. But I know that a lot of members of the General Assembly wanted to come in for a special session, ostensibly the ones I talked to, because they wanted to halt everything Governor
Holcomb
was
doing. At the very least, they didn't want to feel helpless. Yeah. Or look helpless in the eyes of their constituents.
So I think they've spent the last 9-10 months, with people just raining complaints down on them, I'm sure, and felt unable to do anything. And they came into this session deciding, well, we're just going to make sure that nothing like that ever happens again.
Back to where we started. It is all a COVID session.
I personally think that's a contributing factor.
Yeah. Only a couple here minutes before we go, but I also, the end of the session sort of was a bit of some sparks were flying, and charges of racism were leveled, and the booing and heckling of African-American members on the floor when they were at the microphone by their Republican colleagues. The speaker called it an embarrassment. But that still hasn't satisfied the Black Caucus, which says there needs to be implicit bias training for everybody. Do you think that the break, Lindsay, has sort of will calm the frayed or bring the, heal those frayed nerves? Or has that really going fundamentally changed the tenor of the rest of the session, do you think?
I think it may have changed how the rest of the session goes. I mean, the Black Legislative Caucus talked just this week about how they're bringing in various organizations and groups to come to the State House and tell lawmakers how they feel about some of these things, because they're on board with House Bill 1006, as we talked about. But there are some bills, including the one that sparked all of this, that people in minority communities have real issues with, and so they're going to come and speak out and tell lawmakers to back off some of these
things. Have we seen the last of the heckling and booing, though, do you think?
I hope so. I don't think it does anyone any good. House Speaker Todd Houston said he's going to, keep tighter reins. And we did see him, at least trying to do that the last, couple of days of this week, making sure telling lawmakers to stay in their seats and keeping a closer eye on things.
Don't you see, some lawmakers don't look kindly upon being told what to do, as the speaker probably would tell. We may have the last word here for you, Whitney. What do you think the rest of the session will be in terms of kind of the vibe? Will people be able to work together again, or will we be so concerned anytime an issue related to race comes up that so many people will be ready to pounce on even body language that's misconstrued, perhaps?
I don't know. I was not in the room when that happened last week, but the tensions do seem to be a lot higher, and so I think that's just something we'll have to wait and see.
All right. Well, should make for an interesting next couple months. I appreciate you all coming to talk about the first 2 months, and setting the stage for the fireworks to follow. Again, my guests have been Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting, Lindsay Erdody of the Indianapolis Business Journal, Erica Heron of the Indianapolis Star, and Whitney Downard of CNHI. Once again, the push is on to do away with handgun licenses, but will it pass? We'll shoot from the hip on the next Indiana Lawmakers. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis. I thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.